How you doing? This is Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks, The Money Show. I'm your co-host, James Parker. Welcome to the big show. Let's go ahead and get it started. If you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, this is the show for you. New people, this is, we call it The Money Show because that's what we focus on. A lot of people talk about news. A lot of people talk about celebrity gossip. Some people are comedians. This show's focus, though, is money. We can talk about a little bit of news or a little bit of celebrity stuff or a little bit of gossip or whatever, but it's all going to be centered around news. I mean, around money. There's money, and then we are attached to money with a big, giant rubber band. So we can stray a little bit from it, but we will always get pulled back to that. And the trick of this show that no other show has is Gregory Ricks, the guy across the table from me, is a financial advisor during the day. John, New Orleans, you are on Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, John?
Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I've got, I was just listening and you were talking about spousal benefits. And I am turning 66 this month. So, and my wife is 65. She'll be 66 next month or next year in April. So what my plan was, I was going to take, I was born in 1953, so I was going to take her spousal benefits, turn mine on for just spousal benefits and turn hers on. But I got a call back from, after I did all of that, from Social Security Administration saying that because my wife made $70,000 last year, that she, there would be no benefits paid for her, so she would be suspended, they said. And I said, well, that's fine. I just want, you know, I explained to them the reason why I wanted to add the spousal benefits for myself. I needed to have her turned on. And they said, well, she won't get any benefits, and it's suspended. And I said, well, all right, but how does that affect me if I take spousal benefits? And so, they're telling me that because she's suspended, I would also be suspended, that I could not take any of her benefits because of the income.
Let's see. You're born,
right?
Yeah, your FRA is age 66. So she turned on Social Security early, is what you're saying.
Yeah, 6 months early. Yeah, her birthday's in April. She'll be 66. So I figured the difference wouldn't be that much if we turned her on. And then I took her spousal and then let mine ride until I was 70 and then turn mine on.
It's not going to work. They didn't explain to you that it's not going to work that way, because when you turn on the benefit, there's no deeming, meaning you can't defer your benefit and draw spousal. If you're turning on your benefit, you're turning on whichever is larger, the spousal benefit or your benefit. You can't piggyback and then switch to yours later. So she made too much money. So yeah, basically because the clawback, you know, that it's for the amounts over $17,640. So for every $2 over that, they take back a dollar. So she made a lot of money, and basically it canceled out her until she gets to her 66th birthday, where she's full retirement age, and then there's no clawback on that. Okay. However, you can't, and from that standpoint, there's no, well, let me just take the spousal benefit. You have to turn on whichever is larger, is what they're going to do. That went away, gosh, now 4 years ago. Yeah, back in 2015, they changed the rules on that.
Meaning that if, since I was born in 1953, that was grandfathered. Anybody born after 1953, that was the case, but before 53 was okay. We could do that. Not the case?
Yeah, they changed the law in like December of 2015. You had until the end of April of 2016 to get that done, and you didn't, so it's gone.
Okay.
And she's negated it because of income. To even do that, she's got to be full retirement age to get it turned back on as well.
What I could do is just turn mine on now and not wait until I'm 70. Since I'm retired, I'm retiring at the end of this year, and that's why I wanted to get this all set up for January of next year.
Well, it depends on your overall situation. Are you needing that income? Are you needing that Social Security income as a part of your retirement? And she's making pretty good money. How long is she going to continue working?
Well, she had planned on retiring once she reached 66 as well. So just another 6 months.
What's your other sources of income? You have pension, you have assets you're going to draw income from?
Yeah, we've got a lot of money in 401ks and IRAs and stuff like that. Got over $2 million right now.
Who's generating the largest Social Security check? Will yours be larger than hers?
Yes, mine would be larger.
Well, one thing, you know, and this is a discussion, this philosophically, you know, if you love your spouse, you'll defer to leave a larger check, but that doesn't always work out that way. Now she's already turned hers on. So hers is going to get re-kickstarted, obviously, when she reaches FRA, and then there's no income limit or such, or once she's actually stopped working.
I'm sorry. The Social Security Administration advised us that they sent us a form to cancel the application.
What application is that?
For the Social Security. Okay. And then to reapply next year once she turns 66.
Or if she's no longer working. So is she retiring? You said she's retiring in 6 months. Is that when she turns 66?
Correct.
Okay.
But they kind of led us to believe that I could take her spousal benefits starting like in May once she turns 66 and turns hers on.
Kind of refer to it as the collect now and later strategy allows you to collect a spousal benefit while accumulating delayed retirement credits on your own benefit amount. Usually the higher earner of the couple would consider this approach in order to get most possible at age 70. That is a higher age 70 benefit amount would then get locked in as a survivor benefit. So what allows him to do that? And here's the math. Married couples, it's referred to as double dipping. If you were born on or before January 1 of 1954, this collect now and later strategy provides some income in the present while locking in the higher benefit later. Due to Social Security they changed the rules that were signed into law November of 2015. So only those who reach age 62 on or before January 1 of 2016 can file a restricted application for spousal benefits using this option. And John was did make that mark. He was actually 63 in 2016, depending on how his month falls. So John, you can take the spousal benefit. I was just off a year on my math in my head, but we still got it right.
Hey, a delayed correct answer is still good.
Yeah. Well, we want to make sure we're always right on this. And that's why I always kind of like to review the rules and all. Just so many scenarios. And there's a big timing effect because of that rules change in 1954. So that's a really important date when you're talking about Social Security. So the other aspect is, did you make 62 in time by on or before January 1 of 2016? And he did. So he, in fact, can take the spousal benefit. But if the spouse is not drawing earnings, you know, because there is no file and suspend for them like used to could, where she could file as an example and suspend and not actually draw benefits, but the spouse could go ahead and take the spousal benefit. So essentially what they're saying is that if you're not taking a benefit, the spouse can't draw off of it. So that's for a reason. If that benefit is stopped or they change their mind within the first year of turning it on and stop it, and their spouse is drawing a spousal benefit, it stops both. So Social Security has to be being paid out for the ability to draw that. So John, in that case, I definitely would take the spousal if that's going to be sufficient income and defer to age 70 and create a much larger benefit that becomes the leave behind benefit.
Sharon Picayune, you're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Sharon?
Good morning. I'm being offered long-term care insurance at my job, and I was wondering if it's worth taking. They said if you pay in after 10 years, the premium
decreases to 50% and the benefits stay the same. So I'm not sure if it's worth it or not. Have you heard anything about that?
Is this a part of the group benefits, or if and when you leave that employer, that coverage continues with you? Is that correct?
It's an optional benefit, and that at, upon retirement, I can still continue to pay the premium.
Okay, so it's kind of buying permanent coverage as long as you pay the premium.
Correct.
Look, here...
And some of the benefits is that, you know, if I go into a nursing home, heaven forbid, it'll pay for that and in-home care and things like that.
You know, women retire and end up with more disabilities than men, statistically speaking, and women outlive the men. So if you're a couple, the woman's likely to live longer and have more disabilities in retirement because they're living longer up in age and have problems. So you have an increased likelihood of needing that coverage. Ultimately, I think it's good to carry that coverage. And it's, gosh, in this election stuff and Medicare for all and such as that, the one thing that's really not addressed is this type of coverage, because Medicare doesn't cover long-term care situations. It just depends on the premium and if that's going to be efficient for you to continue that into retirement, because I'd hate for you to pay it and then not be able to pay for it later. But I think some of us are going to need that coverage. I would say we all need that coverage, but half of us are actually going to use it, and it's going to cost a lot of money. So I think it's a good option for you, depending on what's it paying. Are you getting a good value for the benefits? And you could shop around a little bit too and get some quote scenarios to see if that's a good value. It's my thoughts on it.
Okay. Thank you very much. Can I ask one follow-up question to a comment you made about Medicare for All?
Yes.
Do you think that would kind of close the, you know, like I was telling her, the loophole of health care for all, you know, by going to the emergency room? Would that kind of decrease that cost for us?
Well, emergency room, my thought is they're patching you up for you to go see a doctor. You shouldn't use emergency room for general care. You should have a relationship with a doctor that, hey, I'm feeling really bad. Can I get in today or tomorrow? Or, hey, can you get me a script? You know, I have a physician that I use, and I think that's really important. Healthcare doesn't like emergency rooms because they're expensive. Now, I was having kidney stone issues last year, and for that pain to be stopped, the only place that could put a stop to that pain was an emergency room. So I used an emergency room probably 4 times last year. I don't know what it cost because my health insurance took care of it. But Medicare for All is not going to work the way they talk about it in campaigns. It's just, that's not going to be a fix, and it's going to bankrupt our country. And it's going to affect the stock market and kind of say, well, the employers are picking it up. Yeah, they are. And they're going to lower the pay, what they're paying employees.
Well, I think Sharon's call is a perfect illustration of how it's not Medicare for All, what they're proposing. Medicare doesn't pay for everything. It pays for 80% of the Part B stuff. She still needs long-term care insurance on top of that. So apparently it doesn't cover long-term care insurance. And they want to eliminate the private marketplace for insurance. Well, what is Sharon supposed to do? Not just not have long-term care insurance, period? No long-term care? Yeah, so...
Yeah, it's a lot of questions. It's a big campaign thing.
But there are deductibles.
Kind of like...
There are
co-pays. Yeah, I'd like to not have to pay for health insurance. And you know, that's a big expense at my company because I cover most of it. And yeah, it's like expense. But you know what? It's just... It's going to have to be paid for somewhere else. And then, you know, are they into then controlling what you can go to the doctor for?
Of course, they're paying the bills. They call the tune.
Yeah, you might not like the system. Well, and I ultimately don't have any answer for you on that. It's just what they're throwing around in campaigns, Sharon, and everybody else listening, is not, It's going to take Congress to do that. And you've seen how Congress has dealt with it over the years. And it sounds real nice, but if you're 65 using Medicare, you know Medicare is not free because there's a premium. And it doesn't cover everything because you need gap insurance as well. Supplements, it's called. And there's a bunch of variations of that.
And look, to be fair, we don't know because we can't predict the future, but we can say that if it does work better, it would be the first time something was privatized and worked better in government hands than in the free market hands. It'd be the first time.
Yeah, and what they're estimating on the cost, they're always low. It's always much worse.
That's an interesting coincidence too, isn't it? All right, hey, some of you listening, you're about to switch off. Your station's going to leave us. If you want to catch the final 2 hours of our show, that's what the Winning at Life app is for. Go download that, and we made it as easy as possible. You just log in and on the front screen, click listen live and boom, it just turns itself on and you can keep listening to the last 2 hours of the show because we got some good stuff planned for you and I don't want you to miss it. In the meantime, if you need the help of a financial advisor, I recommend you start your search with the guy across the table from you here, Gregory Ricks. Go to GregoryRicks.com or call his office 504-832-9200. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How many cars do you think you've bought in your life, Gregory? Triple digits? Are you to 100 that you've bought and sold yet?
I'll have to think about that for a moment.
Over 50. What about that?
Yeah, that's easy.
Well, tell them about your past. I mean, that's one of your first forays into the business world is flipping cars before you could drive them.
Yeah, because I kind of started working when I was 9 years old, cutting grass and side gigs. I always kind of had side gigs ever since I was 9 years old. The story I share is, go back to earlier memory is say Christmas when I was about 7 years old. And I just distinctly, the thing I remember is mom said, Gregory, do not take that apart. Well, that's what I did was take stuff apart. I just wasn't always good at putting it back together yet. And then, when I was age 9 at grandmother's house, there was a lawnmower that didn't work and it was junk. And I said, well, if I can get that working, can I have it to cut some grass? Yeah, you can have it if you can fix it. I mean, you know what they thought? There's like no way in heck that he's going to fix that. So I got a hold of the tools and I took it apart, put it back together. And guess what it did? It started. So I started making money cutting grass as a kid and picked up some other side jobs. I worked, my Sunday school teacher hired me a couple years later to help keep stuff clean at a couple of his businesses. He had dry cleaners, laundromats, and some other enterprises. And then it turned out I helped him repair washer machine and dryers. And then he just kind of let me do the repairs as well. So I'm saving up money. And what was interesting in the story is when I would get paid from him, I would go next door to the bank and there was a bank next door and I had the little passbook and they would stamp it that I put money into my savings account. And what's interesting about that is I was getting more interest back then. That would be what, about 1972. I was getting more interest on just that little savings account than you can get on 30-year treasuries now.
That's so
I was
sad.
Getting over 5% on a little savings account back then. So I saved up money. And then when I was 14, I had an opportunity to acquire two cars, a Chevy Biscayne. I believe that was a 64 and also a Chevy Nova of the same year, Nova 2. It was called, and I bought both of those cars and I don't know what my intention was. It was opportunity. I got them for a few $100 each and I couldn't drive them, but mom would ride with me and I would practice drive around the block or whatever. Then I started getting offers for the cars more than what I paid. And I said, I've regretted selling so many cars that I've had, and I regret selling those. But however, I sold them both for profits. And when I turned 15, I went and bought another car, negotiated for that. And I sold it later for more. It's just kind of what I was doing. And I think I'm pretty sure I had more than 20, 25 car deals while I was in high school. So that's why when you can kind of say, well, how many car deals have you done? I've done more than 50. That's an easy number there. And it's not, once out of school, I really didn't do car flipping anymore as far as trying to make money and such with that. I went in a obviously different direction. I'm not in the car business, but I've done a lot of that over time.
Now, is this a question you get? You have clients or people calling in the office, think about buying a car. What do you think?
We have people come in and ask questions, say, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. What do you think? They'll ask me my opinion and I'll give them some guidance and some help on doing a car deal.
Okay, Greg, we have another tax being proposed. It's been another week. They can't stop proposing new taxes. And I don't want to name any names because I don't want to get political. But when they steer into the lane of the financial world, I feel we almost have a duty to address it. Now, a candidate that's been running for office, many of them have their own version of socialized medicine. They've kind of glommed onto the Medicare for all because 4 years ago, single payer didn't work. Before that, universal health care didn't work. Before that, socialized medicine didn't work. They keep having to change the name. The latest iteration is Medicare for all. But one of the candidates has been criticized because they don't want to admit how they're going to pay for it or even address how they're going to pay for it. So after weeks and weeks of harassing and questions, they decided to actually come up with the plan on how they're going to pay for it. $9 trillion worth of new taxes will fix the or is brought up to address a $52 trillion Medicare for all package. Now, the bad news is the taxes will go up for the middle class. The even worse news is that this plan still needs $43 trillion more of funding over the next 10-year period in order for it to not be a complete drain on the deficit or really just break the economy within a decade. So, Gregory, here it is. You talk about it. You need to invest with the idea that taxes are going up. Then you turn on the TV and there's constantly people coming up with new ways to raise taxes. And this is just the latest one. $9 trillion payroll tax. So where's the other $43 trillion coming from? I don't know. Come on. It's just, what's $43 trillion between friends?
That is a hot mess, that whole thing. She was caught in this trap of doing the Medicare for all and saying it's worth, well, I don't have to justify the money. You know, it's fine. It'll come from somewhere. We're just going to do it, except it's going to bankrupt the country. And saying it's $52 trillion. It's unbelievable. It's going to be worse than that. But what's going to happen is, you know, Medicare actually does charge a premium, which means they're going to charge the premiums going up for everybody on that as well. They show a Medicare premium increase?
See, in this Medicare for all plan, one of the reasons it's $52 trillion is there is no premiums. There is no co-pays. There is no deductibles, which means it's not Medicare at all. Medicare has all of those things. And Medicare doesn't, but this is going to cover everything. This is going to cover long-term care. This is going to cover 100% of all your hospital stays, all your well visits, everything. It's socialized medicine.
Okay. Remember in the last campaign, there was this promise, we're going to build a wall and somebody else is going to pay for it. Did Congress approve that?
Nope.
And did somebody else pay for it?
Nope.
Nope. Gosh, we're going to fix the health care. Did that get fixed by the new president?
Nope.
Did Congress address it or anything?
I mean, they passed some bills, but no.
No, they really haven't addressed it. And somebody running for president can go say these things, but they can't just go in the office. Okay, this is what's going to happen, everybody. I said it's going to do it, and this is it. We're doing it. No, it doesn't work that way. They can run these campaigns promising and saying, yeah, we're going to do this. Everybody's going to have health. It's going to be the greatest thing ever, and it's not, I'm just telling you, it's not going to happen. And if there is Medicare for all, it's not going to be free, premium free for all. If that was viable, why are we charging seniors a premium for Medicare? Why are we charging a premium if this can work?
Because we're mean, I guess. Yeah, what a bunch of jerks we must be. We could have free stuff this whole time.
Well, why aren't we doing it free for them now? And why do they have to buy supplement or utilize Medicare Advantage? Why are they having to pick up additional coverage? Because it doesn't cover everything. Well, why aren't we doing that too? If this is that easy,
right?
Yeah, we could just tax the rich and retirees don't have to pay Medicare premiums anymore. So,
but
that's where I'm at on that. This isn't going to work, and there is no promise police out there. Like, you know, you can't say that, Mr. or Mrs. whoever's running for president or any office. No, you can't promise stuff and say you're going to do that when it's absolutely completely unreasonable. But people are like, oh wow, we can do that. Well, you shouldn't. Well, they ought to say, well, yeah, this is what I want to have done and this is how it should work, subject to Congress passing it and we appropriate the money. Okay, what's reasonable? It's just, we have a crazy system out there and it's just no way on the planet is this going to work.
Okay. So they call it Medicare for all, but it is not Medicare for all. It is not, it does not share some distinct characteristics of Medicare, defining characteristics of Medicare. What they're describing is the VA hospital system, but that's not going to be politically palatable. That's not going to win you any elections. Hey, I want to shove everyone into the VA system. Yay. That'll be great. Subpar care. I got to drive an hour and a half to the hospital. There's long waits and I don't get the doctor of my choice, but hey, it is free. There's no premiums or co-pays or deductibles or any of that, but that's what they're describing as the VA. But they call it Medicare for all because Medicare, when you take the survey of people who are on Medicare, well, it polls very well. People who are on Medicare like it. Of course you do. You're getting the rest of the country to pay for your medical bills. Who wouldn't like that? But also it skirts the constitutional question of having socialized medicine. Because Medicare already exists. Oh, it can't be unconstitutional. We've had it since you've been born, since before I was born. So they're trying to jettison both the constitutional question and the fact that that's not going to be very popular. They're using a popular program, misusing a popular program, mislabeling their program as Medicare for those two primary reasons. But it is not Medicare. How many people are shocked when they get on Medicare to find that there is copays, there is deductibles, there is premiums. You don't get to choose your doctor. There is a need for a private health insurance plan on top of that. Are people shocked to find this out? Or does the general public just think it's socialized medicine?
They're thinking it's socialized medicine for retirees, and it's not. And retirees can choose their doctors, but also, you know, it is complicated, is what I'm going to define it as. It's complicated. And yeah, it's not free and there's some restrictions and, you know, Medicare Advantage is kind of like an HMO and they're playing on the perception that, yeah, you get to have what the retirees have and they're making out like it's free and it's not. One of the things I teased early on is worst financial mistake you can make when buying a car. And this is, I'm pulling this. Matt Edmonds wrote this article, ABC News. And here's an example. And this is a nasty thing. The prospect of paying too much for a new vehicle often fills shoppers with dread. A lot of people really don't like the car experience of buying and such. And I don't see it as a bad thing. One of the core things you have to be able to do is walk away from a deal. You know, that's ultimate deal making guidance, is you need to be prepared to say, you know, I'm good. We just won't do the deal. Edmunds transaction data suggests that people make a hasty change with a surprising regularity, changing cars, changing their mind. That's can be a big mistake. In 2018, for example, just over 23% of vehicle trade-ins were 2 years old or less or newer, because 2 years is generally not enough time to hit the break-even point of a car loan. You're upside down. You're probably having to kick out some more money to get out of that. You know, we're seeing financing, you know, go as long as 7 years now on vehicle.
You might as well just lease if you're going to do that though, right? Aren't you just financing the depreciation at that point?
essentially on a lease for the most part is you're paying interest on the loan balance, and you essentially are paying for the depreciation of the car. And that's why typically 36 months is probably kind of the best area to be in on a lease. And if you go with a 24 month, if that's going to work, you're really having to buy a car that really holds value, but you're squeezing in that depreciation into 2 years. So you're typically going to have a larger lease payment on 2 years at that point versus three. But when you're financing something for 5 years, 6 years, 7 years on financing, you know, 72 months, it's like, wow, you're spreading that out over a longer period of time, and it's going to continue to depreciate all the way through. But the largest part is when you drive that car off is probably the biggest depreciation at that point. To illustrate in this article, they gave an illustration of making a quick switch, and we're using a fictitious situation, but let's say you bought a Honda Accord LX in 2017. You spent a bunch of time getting price quotes, comparing dealers, figuring out what, and comparing interest rate, calculating payments. So you're able to do the deal for $20,643, shaving roughly $3,400 off the MSRP of $24,030. So you got you a deal. And then once all taxes and fees are factored in, your out the door cost came in, let's say, at $22,700. By most accounts, you probably got a pretty good deal. But soon after the purchase, you decide, you know, this Accord just isn't getting it done for me. And you decided you need a SUV so you can haul around more stuff. So you sell the Accord to the dealership just 2 years later for a trade-in value of $13,522. That's 40% less than the original all-in cost of $22,700 you paid 2 years earlier. So the value of the Accord dropped by $9,185. Ouch. That's giving up a chunk of money, you know? So when you've got to get better at making decisions, you know, the dollar amount, even though it's fictitious, they're saying the dollar amounts are real. They use actual values, the selling price, the trade-in amount, the effective depreciation percentage in this scenario are based on actual transactions in which is 2017 Accord LX models were swapped for newer vehicles in 2019. While a 40% loss is substantial, it's worth noting the Accord holds its value rather well in this example. So it could be worse. On the other hand, effective depreciation for a 2017 Ford Fusion SE vehicle that tends to lose money more quickly than the Accord, that would be a 47% depreciation or a loss of $11,314 on a vehicle that sold for $21,713. So if you're needing to get out of a car quickly, it's going to cost you, and you're probably having to put more money into it. Now, the reason, going back where you brought up leasing, and I do some leasing as well on vehicles, but what people are buying, for the most part, they're buying payments, not price. They're buying payments. Cause one of the questions how much can you afford a month? Where do we need to be on monthly payments? And they're doing the deal on that. And from my standpoint, sometimes I buy vehicles without test driving, so don't do what I do. That's the vehicle I want. I go get the vehicle.
No, I see what you're saying about payments. It's a different mindset, because when you go in and buy a new car, it's like, boy, this is a $30,000 investment. But when you go and you lease a new car, you're like, oh, this is $400 a month.
Yeah, and I don't think about it from a payment standpoint. I think about it on price. I'm going to research. I'm going to do my internet search. And I'll reach out to a number of dealers like, okay, I see you've got this car on your lot. What can I get it for? You know, I'm already doing that, and I'll do a deal over the phone. Like, okay, you've sold it. So what do you need a credit card to hold it or whatever till I get time to go by there and sign the paperwork? Go, I don't want to spend a whole day. They get you in the dealer and it's all day thing. I'd rather get it done, figure it out. And then I'm there to do the paperwork. You know, where do I sign?
But you do
so
both.
I can take this home.
You do both leasing and buying. When do you know when to do each one? When do you lease?
It
when do you buy?
It depends on the purpose of the car. If I'm planning to keep it a long time, I'm probably a buyer for that. And if I'm leasing, you know, say through the company's going to lease the car, and I have a couple of company cars, you know, that's, and I know I don't want to keep the car a long time. I know I'm out in 3 years or 36 months or 32 months, depending on what gives me the best pricing on the lease. But I'm always, every time, no matter what, I'm making the deal based on price of the car. Even if I'm leasing, I'm negotiating the price on the car. If I'm buying the car, I'm negotiating based on the price of the car. If I'm financing a purchase, I'm also negotiating the interest rate there. And if I'm buying a car or leasing a car for my wife is driving the car. We've purchased cars that she's driven and I haven't driven. I don't care how it rides. She's the one that needs to care how it rides and happy with it. And her thing is, can she, when she goes doing something for kids at college or whatever and needs to haul a bunch of stuff, she needs to make sure she's going to be able to carry what she's going to carry in it. And she drives an SUV. So it's just, you need to drive that car, and the one that's going to use it most really needs to drive it. So you have a good feel for this. And key thing, always negotiate based on the price of the car.
From Monday's show on the Daily Wrap, where at first we started talking about the ads for the insurance buyouts or annuity buyouts, you know, it's my money and I want it now. And there was some other ones where people were trying to buy out your old life insurance policy, or there's a few buyout.
Oh my
ads.
Gosh, that was really good stuff. Well, and there's a couple other things I covered during the week, you know, the 7 retirement savings mistakes financial advisors see too often.
I've got that
good
one.
The 5, and then the 5 sources of income that you can take that's potentially not taxed was a great topic as well. But you know, and I think people are confused about the one you talked about first, is, you know, the selling of life insurance policies that people own. Some, and I thought that was a very helpful topic. And then you brought up the income riders and such on annuities.
That's
also
the next segment. All right. Yeah, so
all that is super awesome stuff.
Addressing those commercials, because we get questions about this constantly off the show. People, when we're at events and in public, ask us about commercials all the time. That's about 5 minutes. The one about the annuity guarantees, you know, well, you get a 7% guarantee. That's about 4 minutes. We got time for either one of those right now. Which one? The buyouts?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this addresses the commercials first. This is from Monday's show.
Had an interesting one, gentlemen, listening to some commercials and such. And sometimes, you know, I'll put it this way. Sometimes, and I don't know why, but people think I own the radio station there in the New Orleans area. And I'll just be clear. I do not. I don't have any control of what they do, what runs on there, what advertisements are there. And in the financial industry related, and not everybody has to follow certain rules and all, but I'd say from my standpoint, you know, we have to run everything through firms that provide oversight to us. We don't do things by the seat of our pants, say whatever we want. We have to disclosure. And I have a news talk radio show. And I do it live. I don't provide scripts or run anything. I know what I'm supposed to talk about, what I can talk about. But, you know, it is reviewed. And a question regarding a firm, and I see them on TV, radio, and all, and Coventry. They do a number of things. And one of the questions was regarding their and somebody was misunderstanding what they do, you know, where people have life insurance with cash values. And the thought through the email or information I got from them was in regard to, well, you know, people don't need help canceling their life insurance if they're wanting their cash value out of it. They're completely right. People do not need help canceling a policy. They can call their customer service, client services department of whoever handled that for them, or the insurance company directly and saying, hey, I don't want this anymore. I've got $10,000 in cash value. I'd like my money. What's probably going to happen is they're going to send them a form to sign off saying to cancel that and send it back. But what the listener probably doesn't realize, what Coventry and other firms, and they're not the only ones that do this, they're just one of several, but what they're doing on life insurance, and people may not realize this, and we talked about it on the show a few weeks ago, people can sell ownership of their life insurance to somebody else, which means depending on their health or lack of good health, also of their age, there might be a leverage play there that policy perhaps could be worth more than the cash value that's in it. And that is what that company and other companies are doing, is taking a look at that scenario and seeing if there is more value in that policy. And just to even define that, let's say they have a $500,000 policy, they're age 80 and their health is not so good. Those people, and let's say it has a $100,000 of cash value in that $500,000 policy. Well, whoever's looking at it might feel that that thing is worth a payment of $250,000 to take over that $500,000 in death benefit. That's what they're doing there. And I just wanted to clear that, because people, a lot of, since this one listener was questioning that, I said, you know, maybe others don't quite understand what's being offered out there right now. And there's others that have these phrases, you know, I want my money now type thing or whatever. And people have structured settlements. What structured settlements mean is they're receiving a payment, and it might be they settled a lawsuit and they're getting $2,000 a month for the next 30 years. Well, they could take those stream of payments, and they might be offered a large amount of money for those payments. Instead of waiting the next 30 years to get your $2,000 a month, we'll write you a check, and boom, you've handed that contract of $2,000 a month over to that company for doing so. So you see those offers out there, and maybe it's misleading. I don't think it is. I think it's kind of clear, but hopefully that clears it up for people that are kind of hearing, like, what is going on with that stuff? And sometimes it can be a little bit confusing, but I think what they're offering those things to actually is a finite group of people in that situation. That's not really the general public, and most everybody doesn't have policies to sell or structured settlements. I'm not selling my life insurance policy. Are you selling yours, James?
No.
Do you have a structured settlement you want to cash in? You're getting a big check every month for the next 30 years? Me, I'm not either. So it doesn't fit us. Probably doesn't fit you, but there's some people. But we hear those things going on, and it just kind of be confusing. I thought I'd share those thoughts.
All right, that's the highlight for Monday's show, covering commercials. Anything to add to that, Gregory?
Nope, but you see those commercials all the time, and people don't necessarily know what they are. Necessarily think about structured settlements being cashed in, or their life insurance policy. Like, gosh, I didn't know. But that's in one sense, it's something to at least be aware of. Might be a situation where somebody, you know, has a policy, bad health, and would like money now, that they could sell their policy out there and maybe get more for it because they need the money now. Not, it doesn't do them any good after they die.
Well, when we're
probably needing it for maybe to get that medical treatment or whatever to extend their life.
Right. When we're at like radio events or public events where people know who we are, but they're still sort of strangers and they have one chance to ask us one question about finance and they spring it on us. And this is the topic. They almost always use the term scam. Is this some sort of scam? Is this a trick? Is this? And then when I went back and listened to that segment just now, we didn't use that term anywhere. Never did you say it was a scam. So I guess the question we get asked most often, is it a scam? Not necessarily.
It is not. You could be offered this just example of if you have a $500,000 life insurance policy, and you've got cash value of $50,000, but they say, you know what, we're going to give you $150,000 for that policy. You say, well, hell, I was going to cancel it anyhow. Yeah, sounds like a deal. You know, that's what we're talking about.
504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Welcome back. Winning at Life, Live Financial News Talk Radio. If you'd like to join the conversation, here's the number, 504-260-0995. Gosh, we're getting downloads from the app. People are leaving messages with the office. Grant just downloaded the app.
Say hi to our buddy Ram over here in the Facebook Ram. Live. We hadn't seen him in a while. He came back.
We're streaming on Facebook Live and Periscope at this time. And Grant downloaded the Winning at Life app. You can email, text us, call us through the app, stream the show. If you move away from your air feed. And so I've got a number of messages here. Gosh, I need to take a moment and see what's going on here. Let's see. We had one here.
Well, you want to play the other half of this highlight from Monday's show? We'll digest some of that and address them when we get back.
Yep.
Because I imagine you have to look something up for one of those. Okay, so this was also from Monday's show, kind of addressing the other half of the similar situation we talked about in the last segment. This is just a quick little 4 minutes here, and then Gregory will elaborate. And the phones are open, 504-260-0995. We'll get to some of your calls after this as well. Well, when you're going down that road, I thought you were going to go with another misleading thing we hear from those commercials a lot. And that's like, I got a 7% guarantee or a 10% right off the bat guarantee.
Oh.
Or a credit, or how do they put that?
It's 7% guarantee on your money. And I've spoke in public situation where it's come up, like, what's this about giving a 7% guaranteed return on your money? And look, all of us know there's no such return out there on this planet. I've not seen it. And for those that are kind of putting that out that way, I believe they're misleading a little bit, because here's what they're really offering is an income rider that may be growing an income base at 7% for a certain period of years. It's not perpetual. It's not ongoing. Like, oh, I can let it defer for 30 years, let it double every 10, and then I can get this huge income payment. No, they're only letting that go for so long. And if somebody has a roll up for 7%, I think it's a rare one as well. But what they're offering is you put $100,000 with them, an income rider, probably be a 1% fee. That income rider is going to grow at 7%, say for 10 years is usually where they're capped at. And so let's hypothetically say your $100,000 goes to $200,000 in income value, which means at that point you could turn on an income maybe at 4.5% stream from that. But that's not a walk away money. You can only generate income stream from that 7% roll up. Because once it goes to that point and you turn on the income, that 7% growing stops. In most cases, I've seen those income riders don't go beyond 10 years. Back in the day, a few years back, they used to would go longer, but now they do not go that. But understand this, that's not a walk away that, oh, it grows to 100,000 can grow to 200,000 on the 7%, and then I could cash it. No, its cashable value probably isn't going to be a lot more than the 100,000, because it's the yield it's getting on the actual account is not that much in most cases. The 7% goes to an income rider that you're taking income from. When you die, that income could well stop. It could have spousal continuation, but that income's not continuing. The underlying value of the assets of that 100,000 or so, more or less, subject to those distributions, is going to go to the beneficiary. Now, if you, let's throw a scenario out there this way. Okay, you get the roll up in 10 years, your 100,000 say goes to 200,000. You start taking out, let's pull a number, simple math. Let's just say you're pulling out 5,000 a year. So that comes out. The 200,000 doesn't matter anymore because that was the base that the income is coming off of. And let's make it a rounder number. Say it's a 5%, which would make it a 10,000 a year distribution. So once you've turned on the income, the 200,000 doesn't matter. Its only purpose was to determine the number for that. Then you're taking distributions of 10,000 a year. That's being reduced off the account value. And let's say that account value was 125. So now that's being reduced by 10,000 a year. Just make sure you're not misled by these numbers because it's not what it appears to be.
All right, we're back live now. That was from Monday's show, dealing with some intricacies. We don't just do shallow stuff all day, every day. Sometimes it gets second and third level down. And those annuity guarantees, they're intentionally complex and misleading. It sells better.
There's a purpose for those, like I talked about. And it's kind of, you can use those to kind of basically create your own pension. But you're not, it just has to be clear, you're not getting account value growth at 7%. Or 6 or 6.5, whatever that income rider might be, but it's creating once again that base so that you can turn on income in the future based upon what that base achieved. Your account value is typically going to be less.
Tony in New Orleans, you are on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Tony?
How you doing?
Hey.
It's been brought to our attention that one of the members of our LLC has not filed personal or business taxes on his other business for quite a number of years. And I was just thinking, I was going to go see an attorney next week, but I'll ask you, is our business in jeopardy? Can the IRS come and seize our assets because he's a member of our business?
Gosh, I don't know on that. I don't know how they, are you referring to he's not filed as personal or?
He has another business. He hasn't filed personal or his other business taxes in probably 10 years.
Okay.
We're just finding out about it. And
who's handling the taxes on your business, this partnership that you have that he's a member of?
We have a bookkeeper in-house that handles it.
Okay, so the entity you're involved in, everything's been filed. He just hasn't been filing.
Right.
Yeah.
On his
I would get a second opinion. Definitely, I would get a second opinion on that, but man, that is something he needs to address because that problem doesn't go away. There's no time stamp. They can go after all the years, and they can do it later and go back. That's scary.
Because his name's on our accounts, can the IRS and the state seize or garnish our bank accounts?
Yeah, I think so. That is a scary thing. There that he's on your accounts. Lordy.
All right. So
yeah, I definitely go get a second opinion on that.
And
you may need to take some action to protect yourself or get him off accounts for that reason.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks for calling, sharing that. It can be helpful to people. And that's one reason, you know, when you get somebody else put on your account, kind of even for safety reasons. And I see this where parents will add one of their kids onto an account or something just in case, well, if something happens to mom, you know, I can move the money or whatever, like kind of like it's a backup plan. But if that child has financial problems, you're potentially exposing that money to that financial problem. If somebody's going to chase them down for money, whether it's a bill collector or the IRS, absolutely.
Well, you have the discussion that happens, especially when Jude or Wes or Total Wealth Authority is in the room, where for these side projects or your businesses, set up legal entities and start creating like legal boundaries of separation between your personal world and your business world. And if you get partners involved, you know, you want some legal separation between them. And it's for situations like this. Just,
I would definitely go get a second opinion on that and make sure, verify what your exposure is. And then beyond that is what can you do? You know, for people that haven't filed returns in a while, and this comes up, and Jude Heath, you know, he's a contributor to the show and typically is on once a month on the 11 o'clock hour of our show Central Time. And he does pretty good business of helping people solve those back taxes problem. You know, he doesn't mind dealing with taxes and tax returns. And it's something could be even people that should have been taking required minimum distributions. You know, that thing you have to do when you're 70 and a half. Oh, I haven't been doing that. He'll help you fix that as well.
Hey, Tony, you might want to get your partner to catch up on those taxes while you're at it, too. Just throw him Jude's number, see what happens.
Yeah, say, hey, by the way, call Jude Heath, and you can find his information at gregoryricks.com.
I'm James Parker. We're Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks.
So if you're wanting to call up, get some help during my daytime hours at my job, I've got a great team of advisors and service people to help you out. If you want to just maybe do a phone appointment and see if we could bring value, or you kind of say, heck, I need to come in. I need some help and some guidance and advice. We do give advice. 504-832-9200. That number will get you a meeting set up at any of our offices. We'll do digital meetings, you know, video meetings, go-to meetings, so to speak, Zoom meetings. We've got a number of methods that if you want to just sit at home and have a meeting with us via computer, that's easy to do nowadays. If you want to come in and sit across the table and have a discussion with us, that's easy to do as well. Just phone call away, 504-832-9200. The firm's website is gregoryricks.com.
You know, Tony's phone call made me think of a call we had about this time, about a year and a half ago, where the nice lady called from Abita. Her and her husband have a business together, and she found out that he hadn't filed taxes in the last however many years. I forgot what the number was. This seems to be one of the more popular impetuses to get people to call in and get some financial help. Hey, my business partner, my husband, somebody got behind on taxes.
Yeah, she said he just didn't think of it as a very big deal. Like it's fine. And she was stressing over it. And I told her she could go ahead and file return on her income taxes. You know, I don't know. What you would do from a standpoint, can you force your spouse to do so? You know, go do the returns. Do they actually, I don't know the legal standpoint of that. Can you do the return? Like Monique, your wife says, hey, I don't like doing tax returns. I don't like government forms. I don't want to sign it. Can you compel your spouse to, hey, I'm doing it, whether you sign it or not, but I think it does require their signature on it. Unless you're signing for them, then I don't know the legality of that. So, but you know what? If they don't want to, you could still file your return, married, filing separately. So that is an option, but seek guidance, get some help on that.
Just start the process now.
You should. Yeah. It's once again, let's have a conversation. Let's start a conversation. Go start a conversation with a CPA. We kind of recommend Jude Heath. He's a contributor on the show as well monthly, but, and he'll have a conversation with you, but you need to start a conversation and find out where you're at. What's this going to do? You need to get a clock started. One thing about starting a clock, meaning file the return. That sets a time frame that limits after so much time, they can't come back after you.
There's a statute of limitations.
Even if it was wrong, they can't come back. But if you don't have a filing and, oh my gosh, it's open-ended and it just gets worse. And look, if you are owed money and don't file it, I think beyond 3 years,
mm-hmm.
you're not getting that money back, even if they owed you money. But you wait longer, they'll they can come after your money
longer than 3 years. Yeah.
Yeah. So start a conversation with Jude or somebody else if necessary, depending on where you are. His office is in the Metairie area, but you could have a conversation with him. And you can go to gregoryricks.com to get more information about how to reach him. We've got a link on the website. We just want you to not have to lose sleep at night thinking about that. And that goes for investing on that side. I'd hate for you to continue to lose sleep worrying about how you're invested. Are you doing the right thing? Do you have too much risk? Do you have balance? And I kind of define it as blending. Do you have blending? And we can help you with that too.
All right. So we have two people who called in and they didn't want to wait on hold and they got their questions. Angie's just going to give us a summary. Okay. And then you've got the text question that we all have to do before the end of the show.
Okay.
So we kind of got to hurry here. Angie, tell me Karen's situation here. You sent me a text, but I believe it'd probably be better if you just reiterated it verbally.
Yeah, so Karen had a 20-year life insurance policy that she paid off, you know, for 20 years. And then when she was, you know, when it was time to renew, the monthly premium moved up to $700 a month. She heard something earlier about selling policies. Could she have sold her policy instead of just not renewing it?
I could say, yeah, she probably could. But it depends on her situation. What they're typically looking for is somebody that's older and bad health for it to be a leverage play. And it depends on the face amount, you know, and I just think there's a limited amount of people in that situation that could benefit by selling, meaning you're selling that insurance to somebody else. You could transfer ownership of that policy to somebody else. And when you die, you understand they're getting the death benefit from that because basically they bought the rights to your death benefit from you. And depending on face amount, age, health, it could have value to that. But not everybody's policy has value on that. It's a leverage play because you just think of it from an investor standpoint. They're buying it for a premium. They've got to keep it paying a price to you to buy it. Then they've got to keep it in place until you die for it to pay off for them as an investment.
And you do Janet's question.
So Janet from Gaucher, she wanted to know, should she be concerned about the future of her 401k or Social Security? She's been hearing a lot of fear in the news.
Fear in the news.
Is Social Security going away? Is your 401k going to be confiscated?
Social Security, they're going to increase the payroll taxes and fix that. They're running out of money, but they're just going to increase the taxes. That's coming before they have to cut Social Security benefits in the future. Your 401k is your money. Now, it is taxable when you start taking it out. So you actually don't own all of it, but the government's not going to confiscate that money. I know you see a lot of stuff on the web and they're not.
There might be a nice revolution for you, Janet, if that happens. So I wouldn't worry about it. All right. Now you have one more from the text function on the Winning at Life app.
Yeah.
If we can finish that up here.
And this was when we were talking about manufacturing slowing. Grant texted through the Winning at Life app. One thing I have not heard many people discuss about the slowing manufacturing numbers is the growing shared economy, ride sharing, car sharing, farm equipment sharing, large equipment sharing, with more existing equipment and manufactured items being shared during times. I'm reading it as it's texted here. They previously had been inactive. It reduces the need for new equipment, cars. I think it's one reason manufacturing lagging while the economy keeps chugging along. And the economy is chugging along, and that is cyclic as well. I just think their cycle. It's the cycle of life. It's the cycle of manufacturing. And when I talk about my 50-50, 50-50 investment philosophy, investment management philosophy, it's how do you create the cycle of financial life? And I think Grant has a good point there.
Yeah. Tell him about your day job.
Financial advisor, money manager, creator of the 50-50, 50-50 money management philosophy. I think it's a pretty cool strategy People are loving it. I am too. 504-832-9200, gregoryricks.com.
Your home away from the show is winningatlife.com and the Winning at Life app. Thank you very much for hanging out with us on your Saturday. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Investment advisory services offered only by duly registered individuals through AE Wealth Management, LLC. AE Wealth Management, Gregory Ricks & Associates, W.J. Blanchard Law, LLC, J. Heath & Company, and Mortgage Gumbo are not affiliated companies. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. Any references to protection, safety, or lifetime income generally refer to fixed insurance products, never securities or investments. Insurance guarantees are backed by the financial strength and claims-paying abilities of the issuing carrier. This radio show is intended for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be used as the sole basis for financial decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Annuities are insurance contracts designed for retirement or other long-term needs. They provide guarantees of principal and credited interest, subject to surrender charges. Annuity guarantees and protections are backed by the financial strength and claims paying ability of the issuing insurer. Hypothetical examples have been provided for illustrative purposes only. It does not represent a real-life scenario and should not be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Gregory Ricks & Associates is not permitted to offer, and no statement made during the show shall constitute legal or tax advice. Our firm is not affiliated or endorsed by the U.S. government or any governmental agency. The information and opinions contained herein provided by third parties have been obtained from sources believed to be reliable, but accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed by Gregory Ricks & Associates. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.